Hello and welcome to Radio Reader. This is Naomi Jacobson, and I'm bringing to you this morning the commercial news of Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm going to start the commercial news for March 22nd with a story about stormwater fee fails and mayor to offer new budget. After the Danville City Council voted to approve one fee increase but failed to pass a second new fee, Mayor Scott Eisenhower said he would put together a new city budget recognizing the revenue numbers and that the new budget may or may not include 16 firefighter layoffs. It was a full City Council chambers Tuesday night, with the public taking both sides of the stormwater management fee and most people, including several firefighters in the audience, showing support against 16 firefighter layoffs. Following more than an hour of audience comments about the issues, the Danville City Council voted 11-2 against establishing a stormwater management fee, and 8-6 with Eisenhower providing the eighth majority vote, in favor of an increase from $4 to $8 in the base monthly public safety pension fee. The pension fee increases $1 more for every 5,000 square feet of rooftop with a new $36 cap. Business persons, including Dan Carlton and the Mervises, were against the stormwater management fee. "We just can't handle any more taxes and fees," Carlton said. He said the city is going about the fee structure the wrong way. Another way to address stormwater issues needs to be found. The city doesn't need any more reasons for new businesses not to come to the city and current businesses to leave, Carlton added. Telling a business to absorb $1,000 more in fees a month, this is a significant impact, Carlton said. Mervis Industries sent a letter to aldermen in opposition of the fee. Ward 1, Alderman Ricky Williams Jr. said the city can't afford to lose a business such as Mervis Industries with hundreds of jobs. He asked if the next generation of the Mervis family would do business here with all the city's taxes and fees. "That's just one of many," Williams said, about the business impact with a stormwater fee and also the impact on low-income residents. Some aldermen ask about having a lower tier of fees instead of starting at $3.50 a month and going up to $1,000. Additional budget cuts and finding money elsewhere also was discussed. Ward 5 Alderman Tom Stone said he's sorry it will cost one of the city's businesses $60,000 more a year, but flooding in people's basements is a safety and public health issue too. "You'll get your basement flooded more often than you'll have a fire," he said. The City Council also heard from several residents, including Oregon Street resident Jack Nallet, about the city's number one job being the lives and safety of our citizens. "Public safety needs to be the city's top priority," they said. The council heard from Danville Assistant Fire Chief Tom Pruitt, who gave fire departments self-sustaining options to layoffs and additional fees, including safer grants to pay for 75% of firefighter salaries for 2 years, and city-provided ambulance service. And here's a story about comedy offers look inside family's odd situation. Siblings Vanya and Sonia share the family home, both mostly walking through their days without much effort or ambition about their parents' deaths. After their parents' deaths. When their sister Masha, a movie star who supports them, returns with her younger boyfriend, Spike, things begin to change and the audience will find plenty to laugh about as the four sort out the next phase of their lives. Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike opens Friday in the Fisher Theater, 158 North Vermilion Street. The adult comedy is the latest production by the Dark Horse Theater Company. It opens Friday night with presentations Saturday and Sunday, as well as March 31st and April 1st and 2nd. Jennifer Lee, who was producing the play, said the Dark Horse Board selected Vanya, which won the 2013 Tony for Best Play after reading the script. "I'd seen performance clips on the Tonys," Lee said. "The script is hilarious. I was in one of the author's, Christopher Durang, plays in college and loved it." Lisa Lovelace is directing the cast, which has been in rehearsal since January. Colin Hess plays Spike, a character who spends a lot of time with his shirt off. "It's the Hollywood hunk thing," Hess said. "He tries to get his shirt off as often as possible. There's even a reverse striptease with Spike." Spike joins the family thanks to Masha, played by Trish Seder. Masha doesn't know Spike, and her assistant Nina, Sarah Todd, are carrying on behind her back. Pamela Adam as Cassandra rounds out the cast. Melanie Clark portrays Sonia, a character a lot like me, a little, well, not really. After caring for her parents for all those years, her character starts to think she's led a wasted life. Then she starts to feel more hopeful. She starts to get out of the box a bit, and she realizes she has something to offer where she didn't think she did before. Lee said the play includes a lot of jokes about age and growing older. Durang likes to put it in a lot of jokes about other plays, Lee said, like the character Cassandra from a Greek tragedy, who can see the future, but no one believes her. There is so much humor in the script that even if some in the audience don't get the references, it's still funny. The Fisher seats about 50 people for each performance. Upcoming productions for Dark Horse include A Long Day's Journey into Night, Oleana, Venus and Fur, and God of Carnage. And now here's a story about talent galore on the floor. Singers, dancers, and musicians to perform at NJCAA. Local residents are going to show the guests at this week's National Junior College Athletics Association Men's Division II National Basketball Tournament that the area has talent. This year's tournament coincides with spring break at Danville Area Community College and at schools across Vermilion County, creating a quandary for DAC staff members who are in charge of lining up the halftime entertainment that has consisted mostly of high school bands in the past. Late last week, Dawn Nasser, coordinator of campus and community resources and one of three DAC staff members in charge of entertainment during the tournament, had most of the spots filled. This year's national anthem singers are Kurt Kaiser and Candace Manning, both of whom sang Tuesday, Miranda Payne, who performs at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. today, Bonnie Marrow at 11 a.m. and Kaiser at 6 p.m. Thursday, Josephine Gurrett at 9 a.m. and 4 on the Floor Quartet at 6:30 p.m. Friday, and Gurrett at noon and Forever Fort Barbershop Quartet at 7:30 Saturday. Doc Ashton and the Root Canals, as well as the Eastern Illinois University Band, will take turns serving as the pep band on various evenings this week. Halftime performances will be at 1 p.m. Thursday by Toby Peck, a DAC player who will sing a song from the college's upcoming spring play, Funny Girl, and Danville Dance Group, Critical Ambition, will perform at 6 p.m. and at 8 p.m. Thursday. They have a wide range of ages, Nasser said, of the dancers in Critical Ambition. The halftime performers at 6:30 p.m. and at 8:30 p.m. Friday will feature University of Illinois student Pedro David Bello Malinato, who will perform Latin music on his harp. The Marine Corps League Detachment 824 will present the colors at 7:30 p.m. Saturday. The halftime headliners for the tournament, however, might just be the newly formed Naco and the Sour Notes. Octogenarian trumpeter Ron Lindvall joined clarinetist DAC President Stefan Naco and Laura Hedskin, coordinator of corporate and community education, to perform during both halftimes Tuesday night and again at 3 p.m. today. At noontime on Tuesday, the trio gathered at Liberty Estates, where Lindvall resides, to rehearse for the first time. Nocco, exuding an East Coast vibe, was dressed in a fedora and New York Yankees jacket. "The band is in the bag," Nocco said as he set up the equipment needed to play the pre-recorded backup band music. Hensgen admitted she was a little nervous to perform with a seasoned musician like Lindvall, especially since Lindvall's son was her 7th or 8th grade teacher when she attended middle school in Hoopston. "I've been playing clarinet since 4th grade, but honestly I hadn't played since I graduated high school 27 years ago," she said. Lindvall quipped, "I've been playing 80 years. I started when I was 5. As the trio played through a half-hour set of songs, including The Chicken Dance, This Land Is Your Land, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, Summertime from Porgy and Bess, Carlos Sonatas, Smooth and Danny Boy, which Lindvall artfully rearranged, an audience started to gather. Nocco welcomed the onlookers, cautioning them, "If your ears can handle it." "Smooth is a misnomer. We're anything but," Nocco joked, adding, "Ron, I think you're carrying us." Richard Sweetcorn Layden, a longtime Hoopston farmer, was in the audience and gave his approval, commenting, "They're good." This week's Teacher of the Week is Andrea Byram, No Subject She Can't Handle. Meet Andrea Byram, who's in her 26th year of teaching at First Baptist School in Danville. She also taught 3 years in Miami and 2 years in Massillon, Ohio, and was a homeschool teacher for 7 years. Byram currently teaches 5th grade, but has taught different elementary grade levels, math to middle and high school students, and PE to grades 1 through 12 students. "I suppose versatility and flexibility make me unique, since I have taught so many different subjects and grade levels," she said. What's unique about your school? First Baptist is unique because all of our students, 146 of them, are in one building. I get to see most of the students throughout the day, and I can watch them as they mature and develop their talents. I now have children of some of my past students. I love seeing how my former students have turned out to be responsible adults and good parents. What do you enjoy about the age group you teach? I like fifth graders because of their independence. They're old enough to keep themselves productively occupied when there is downtime, but they're still young enough to be moldable. Favorite tactic for getting students to pay attention? I talk quieter and quieter until they can barely hear me, or I say a couple of memorized phrases in Japanese, including the words to "Jesus loves me," "Where is the bathroom?" or "I'm sorry, I don't speak Japanese." Usually, their curiosity gets the best of them. Funniest question a student ever asked? Did you ever get in trouble at school when you were a kid? My favorite school lunch as a student. All through elementary school, I walked home and ate lunch with my mom and younger sisters. I felt sorry for the kids who had to stay at school. The best day of the week. I love Mondays with the whole week and all of its possibilities ahead of me. If I weren't a teacher, I would be. When I was in junior high, the career assessment had me pegged for a mechanic. Obituaries in this edition. Willie Benny Hall, 91 of Danville, died Thursday, March 16th. 2017, visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, March 24th, at New Life Church of Faith, Danville. Service 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Interment, Spring Hill Cemetery, Danville. Leake & Sons Funeral Home, Danville, is assisting the family. Dorothy Mae Paris, Mickey, of Danville, died at 8:36 p.m. Saturday, March 18, 2017, at home. Graveside services 1 p.m. Friday, March 24, at Danville National Cemetery. Rootveld Funeral Services and Crematory in Tilton is assisting the family. From Springfield, 124 prison nurses get layoff notices. The 124 union nurses working in Illinois prisons have received layoff notices telling them their jobs are being privatized, according to a letter from Governor Bruce Rauner's office obtained by the Associated Press. Calls to the Danville Correctional Center were referred to the Illinois Department of Corrections. A spokesperson at the IDOC said no nurses at the Danville Correctional Center are impacted by the layoffs. The notice from the Republicans' administration to the Illinois Nurses Association said nurses at prisons would be laid off June 15th, 2 days after contract nurses are hired. Alice Johnson, the association's executive director, said Rauner is retaliating because the union rejected a tentative contract agreement last year. It's an attempt to bully and intimidate the nurses, and it's not going to work, Johnson told the AP. She said the move is particularly troublesome because of a nationwide shortage of nurses that forces Illinois prison nurses to sometimes work 80 hours a week while vacant positions go unfilled. A spokeswoman for Rauner did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The letter from Ed Jackson, Corrections Labor Relations Chief, contends that contract with the nurses is void. But Johnson said the union and Rauner signed an agreement to abide by the terms of the last collective bargaining until deal unit, a new one, is signed. The nurses filed an unfair labor practices complaint last week with state regulators claiming Rauner is reneging on his obligation to continue negotiating. The Illinois Nurses Association represents 3,500 nurses statewide, including 1,200 Illinois government employees. Johnson did not know why prison nurses were singled out. She argued that a private contractor's nurses aren't subject to the same supervisory oversight as a government worker. And she said a private contractor's profit motive could interfere with decisions about staffing and quality of care. Nationally, studies show a large pool of nurses is ready to retire in the next 5 years. At the same time, prison populations are aging and care is becoming more specialized. Georgetown Club sponsors Easter Art Contest. The Georgetown Ladies Community Club is sponsoring an Easter-themed coloring contest. The club, a member of the Illinois General Federation of Women's Club, will partner with teachers and students of the Georgetown Ridge Farm School District. The contest will be divided by grade categories, kindergarten through second grade, third through fifth, and sixth through eighth grades. An Easter picture will be provided to kindergarten through fifth grades. Grades 6 to 8 will be required to draw an Easter-themed picture. There is no charge to enter the contest. Participants will color their picture using crayons or colored pencils. Markers or watercolors may not be used. Students are to complete their picture and give it to their teacher on or before Tuesday, April 11th. The club's Easter Bunny will announce the contest winners at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 15th, at the Georgetown Public Library. First place contest winners in each category will be awarded a cash prize of $20, second place $10, and third place $5. Prizes are to be picked up before 2 p.m. April 15th at the Georgetown Public Library. Judging will be done by a club member and two library board members. The club also will hold a drawing for Easter baskets for four age groups up to 2 years, 3 and 4 years, 5 and 6 years, and 7 and 8. Children may sign up for these baskets from April 7th until 9:30 a.m. April 15th. For questions or further information, call Tracy at 597-5874. No one above law, Supreme Court pick says. Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch declared Tuesday he's made no promises to Donald Trump or anyone else about how he'll vote on abortion or other issues, and testified he'll have no trouble as a justice holding anyone accountable, including the president who picked him. Gorsuch also called Trump's attacks on federal judges disheartening and demoralizing. During the long second day of his Senate confirmation hearings, Gorsuch made two other notable statements in response to questions from members of the Judiciary Committee, and both also related to Trump, who nominated him. Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina asked Gorsuch whether Trump had asked him to overturn Roe v. Wade, the case establishing a right to abortion, and what he would have done had Trump asked him to do so. "Senator, I would have walked out the door," Gorsuch replied. "That's not what judges do." Later in the day, Gorsuch acknowledged that he and Trump discussed abortion during his Supreme Court interview, but only how divisive an issue it is. Their conversation touched on abortion, Gorsuch said, after Trump bemoaned his loss of Gorsuch's native Colorado in November. When Vermont Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy asked Gorsuch if a president is free to ignore laws on national security grounds, Gorsuch replied that nobody is above the law in this country, and that includes the President of the United States. Some Democratic senators who are not on the Judiciary Committee called for a pause in the confirmation process after FBI Director James Comey said Monday that the Bureau is investigating Russian meddling in last year's election and potential ties between Trump associates and Russia. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren said on Twitter, "The while the investigation continues, lifetime court appointments can wait." Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley dismissed the idea as ridiculous. On a day mostly devoid of drama, Gorsuch batted away Democrats' efforts to get him to reveal his views on abortion, guns, and other controversial issues, insisting he keeps an open mind for the entire process when he makes rulings. His comments were similar in response to questions from majority Republicans as they tried to help him highlight his neutrality in the face of Democratic attempts to link him to Trump. The abortion question was especially pointed because Trump himself has insisted he would appoint pro-life justices who would vote to overturn the 1973 Roe decision. Gorsuch, likewise, wouldn't comment on litigation over Trump's efforts to ban travel to the U.S. by people from some mainly Muslim countries. He did, however, say publicly what he had previously told senators in private about Trump's attacks on judges who ruled against him on that issue. "When anyone criticized the honesty and integrity or the motives of a federal judge, I find that disheartening. I find that demoralizing," he said. Senator Richard Blumenthal, the Connecticut Democrat, asked, "Including the president?" "Anyone is anyone," Gorsuch replied. As Tuesday's questioning wore on, senators and Gorsuch engaged in a routine well-established in recent confirmation hearings. The nominee resists all requests to say how he feels about Supreme Court decisions, even as he is asked about them again and again. Such was the case with questions about rulings on campaign finance, abortion, gun rights, even a privacy ruling from 1965 that John Roberts explicitly endorsed in his confirmation hearing in 2005. Gorsuch made one exception, describing the two-year-old decision extending same-sex marriage nationwide as settled law, a term he did not apply to any other decision. The 49-year-old Denver appeals court judge kept a smile on his face most of the day, although he seemed to show flashes of anger under questioning from some Democrats. Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois pressed Gorsuch on claims by a former student at the University of Colorado Law School, who said Gorsuch implied in a legal ethics class in April that he believes many female job applicants unfairly manipulate companies by hiding plans to begin families. She remembered him saying that many accept job offers but quickly leave with maternity benefits. "Those are not my words, and I would never have said them," Gorsuch said. He later explained he was trying to teach students about inappropriate questions from prospective employers, not endorsing inquiries. Other students told the AP the accuser was misconstruing the lesson. Gorsuch reacted sharply when Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island asked him when he knew about a multimillion-dollar ad campaign run by a conservative group that backs his nomination. Ads have been running mainly in states won by Trump last year and in which Democratic senators face re-election in 2018. "Is it any cause of concern to you that your nomination is the focus of a $10 million political spending effort, and we do not know who's behind it?" Whitehouse asked. Gorsuch replied, "Senator, there's a lot about the confirmation process today that I regret. A lot." Republicans are unanimous in support of Gorsuch. Democrats remain incensed over how Republicans treated former President Barack Obama's nominee, Judge Merrick Garland, who was denied even a hearing last year after Antonin Scalia's death created an opening on the high court. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell insisted that since a presidential campaign was underway, it was the right of the next president to fill the opening, and his gamble paid off when Trump won the election and chose Gorsuch. Gorsuch declined a couple of invitations to tell senators how felt about the treatment of Garland, saying only, "I think the world of Merrick Garland." There are now just 8 justices on the 9-member high court. In an interview with Associated Press reporters and editors Tuesday, McConnell dismissed whining and crocodile tears by Democrats over Garland, insisting they would have done the same thing in his position. And an interesting story about a loose snake. Loose snake slumbers on Alaska flight. Anna McConaughey was flying to Alaska's largest city when the announcement came over the intercom. A passenger on a previous flight had brought a pet snake on board. "The passenger has gotten off the plane. The snake had not." The pilot came and said, "Guys, we have some loose snake on the plane, but we don't know where it is," McConaughey said Tuesday. Unlike the movie Snakes on a Plane, this one wasn't venomous. Mostly, it was sleepy. A little boy, one of 7 passengers on the Ravan, Alaska commuter flight Sunday from the Alaska village of Aniak to Anchorage, was climbing on his seat when he spotted the slumbering snake. It was lying partially covered by a duffel bag near the back of the plane. He said, "Oh, Mom, look at this. What's that?" McConaughey said, "That's how we figured out there was a snake sleeping in the corner." "There was no panic," McConaughey said. "Most people wanted to see the snake." A pilot came back to help, she said, leading to a short discussion with a flight attendant on how best to capture it. He said, "I'll hold the bag and you grab the snake," McConaughey said. "Quite a gentleman." The flight attendant grabbed the snake by the belly and dropped it into a plastic trash bag. It spent the rest of the flight in an overhead storage bin, and the plane reached Anchorage on schedule. Anchorage television station KTVA first reported the incident. McConaughey's photos show a pale snake about 4 to 5 feet long. She said it appeared to want only to go back to sleep. A spokesman for the airline, William Wash, said in a statement that the snake owner had not registered the pet for travel in the cabin of the Ravan, Alaska flight. After arriving in Aniak, he reported that his snake was missing and likely on the return trip to Anchorage. And that ends the reading of the Commercial News, Wednesday, March 22nd edition. Thank you again for tuning in to Radio Reader. This is Naomi Jacobson signing off for Radio Reader. Tune in again, please. Thank you very much.